Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you 60 more minutes of sports talk entertainment coming your way right this very second. And boy, how do we have stuff to talk about coming up on the show. We have got quite a bit to discuss regarding the Friday Football Festival tomorrow. And, of course, the weekend of football coming up. We talked about it back in hour number one, but I would like to dive back into what I think may be the biggest college football landscape shifting story since the NIL and transfer portal stories that the Big Ten has placed on our plate this AM. I'm going to get to that coming up here in just a moment from right now. I would like to potentially get back, if you guys are interested, in that Chris Fowler audio that I played earlier, because I've got a few more thoughts on that we need to get to, and plenty more. In the meantime, you know what I do want to do? I do want to get back to that Big Ten story. I want to get back to the Big Ten story. If you're just tuning in, there was a article that dropped on ESPN from Pete Thamel and Dan Winsome. These are two of the, if not the two, biggest names in college football journalism, the actual reporting of what is happening. And when the two of them collab, as the kids call it, on a story, it means there's a lot to it. And likely, it is very important. I believe that this is the case here. According to Thamel and Wetzel, the Big Ten is currently in active discussions about taking a private equity deal that would immediately place about $2 billion with a B dollars in cash money, homies, into the pocket of the Big Ten to distribute to their schools. In return for that, the Big Ten will do two things. Number one, they will create inside of the conference office a separate entity that is under the umbrella of the Big Ten that will be in charge of all conference revenue streams. Any money that would come into the conference will go into this entity. This entity will operate A, by doing all it can business-wise to try to grow the revenue streams coming into the conference, and B, will be the entity that will distribute the money back to the Big Ten's member institutions, so try to get more money in the pot and then distribute the money around. This entity will be structured like effectively a business that has shares available. Now, it obviously will not be public, although I could see in the future a conference, probably in the distant future, I could see a conference going public one day, like a business. You, as a fan of South Carolina, could buy stock in the Southeastern Conference. And as the Southeastern Conference continues to grow, you could make money off of the conference. That's down the line, because right now it will be a private entity. However, it is not going to be actual shares, as in you own X amount of this or that. It is just that the entity will distribute the revenue as if the 18 member institutions all own one share, the conference owns one share, and the investment group owns one share. So effectively, an investment group will put $2 billion in cash money into the Big Ten. In return, the Big Ten will create an umbrella, a business within the conference whose job is to grow revenue streams, therefore make the conference more profitable, and then distribute that money. In return for that $2 billion, the entity will receive 1/20th of that money. Effectively, the entity, whichever the investment firm is that goes in and gets the contract for this, will receive an equal share of the money that the schools receive and that the conference receives. The belief being that over the length of the grant of rights that the schools have signed on to, and will be extended, I'll get to that in a minute, in the time frame that that money is being grown and brought in by the conference, the entity will receive the same amount that the schools and the conference do, and their belief is that over the time period of the grant of rights, which right now expires in 2036, but if this deal is approved, the grant of rights agreement would extend until 2046, meaning that this investment firm believes that from now, October 2nd in 2025, or whatever date it is that this deal gets approved and the GOR is extended, they believe that from that day until 2046, when the grant of rights agreement runs up, the belief is that that private entity would get more than $2 billion back. That is how an investment works, right? It's much as if you went on to your stock trading firm and you bought a share of Apple for $500 or whatever it is. Your belief is that over the time that you own that stock, eventually that stock will begin to add on to it. And that when it comes time to sell that stock, it will be worth more than $500 and you will get your money back plus your investment. It's just investment. That's all it is. Now, this doesn't shock me in the least. And it doesn't shock me in the least because college football is a billion-dollar business. And I accepted this years and years and years ago. And this is why I've said, to the chagrin of many of you, it doesn't matter if you hate it. You must accept it. It's like Ric Flair. You don't have to love me, but you do have to respect me. You do have to understand I'm the champ. This was always in inevitability because when there is a billion-dollar business, people who invest money to make money are going to want a piece of the pie. And considering we have created a college football world, which is not going anywhere, where getting money is priority 1, 2, 3, 4 through 12 of college institutions, this is a way to do it. And not just do it and get and end up getting however many millions of dollars between now and 2036, but it's a way to get $2 billion now to invest in the product to get more money per year than you would have if you didn't have $2 billion now, and all you have to do is pay a share of it back to this company. It makes sense. I accepted it years ago. I have been encouraging you to accept it. If you have, this isn't a shock to you either. Now, there is a spot about this conversation that I am concerned about. There is a spot about this conversation that I don't like, and it is this. People who invest billions with a B of dollars into something, they are not the type of people who are going to cut you a check for $1 billion and then walk away and be like, all right, call me when my money's ready to pick up. They are the type of people who are going to have a seat at the table. They are the kind of people who are not just going to have a seat at the table, but when they have the seat at the table, they're going to look across and go, oh, I'm sorry. Do you want my $2 billion? Because if so, this is how I want you to do the thing. And as much as we have said that the people who run college football now, not athletic directors, not school presidents, not head coaches, None of them run football. They may run programs and they may run conferences, but they don't run football. The people who run football are the TV executives who hand out billion-dollar contracts. That's who dictates what's happening in college football. And as I have been saying for a long time to you, those people do not give a good gosh darn about how you or me or Lonzo or Rob or anybody else feel about college football. They care about one thing and one thing alone. How do we grow revenue? How do we get more money into the kitty? And
if that means... Why'd you say your name twice?
I didn't. Rob Young from Borderlands is here, and we're going to be talking some baseball with him because we're talking wrestling next. And then if Rob's kind enough to hang on for a while, we're going to talk about his Dodgers moving on out of the wild card round last night by absolutely bee-slapping the Reds two nights in a row. And my big fear that the Dodgers we expected in the regular season may have just showed up, in which case everybody else, you might as well pack it up. We'll get to some baseball with Rob Young from Borderlands and some wrestling and Fight Club, a segment I've never forgotten once in my life, over the next few minutes. So, the people that run football are the TV execs who sign billion-dollar contracts that they give to the conferences, and then the conferences distribute it. And they don't care about you or me or anybody else. They care about one thing, which is growing revenue, which is why I've said the one way that we as fans have to fight back against the businessification of college football is to completely cut it out of our lives. It's to stop watching it. I'm not saying stop buying merch, stop buying tickets, stop. I'm saying you cannot watch it. You can't watch it on TV. Your TV must send a signal back to the ratings companies that say nobody's watching this, because then the money comes down. Then the TV companies go, whoa, 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 ratings are down. Therefore, the money we're giving you for your product comes down. But I also know us. And we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that because I have been listening to people complain about the direction of college football for the better part of a decade now. And the ratings are going up every single year. Every year, they're going up. It is the same thing, that different situation. But as I brought this up, because it is the example to lean on. When Colin Kaepernick took a knee for the national anthem, and there was an outcry amongst the masses, we are done with the NFL. We're not having this. And then the ratings went up that year. Like that year that all of y'all were done, the ratings went up. So no, not only were you not done, but the NFL had even less of a reason to step in and do anything that you want them to do. The reality is, as I said when we played the Chris Fowler thing earlier about coaching, the reality is our passion for college football, the reason that it is a billion-dollar industry, that is now having business people, investors, people who don't care about football. They don't care about football. They never have and they never will. They only care about how do I use my money to make more money. That's it. End of discussion. They are now heavily involved. They are now calling the shots. And it's not going to change because we all love our football. We're not going anywhere. We're not going to stop watching. I guarantee it. It could be businessified 1,000 more times. And yet, the national championship game this year, like it did last year, will top the ratings it did last year, like it did last year for the year before that. That's just the reality of the situation. So, on one hand, no, it doesn't shock me. And honestly, I don't even really think I care all that much. Because as Lonzo pointed out, it will not have an immediate impact on the football being played on the football field on Saturday. NIL had a bigger impact. The portal had a bigger impact. However, it will have an impact on our digestion of the product at large. And it may take some time, but it will start to become more product-driven. Scratch that. Not product-driven in terms of football, but advertising-driven. It will become more corporatized than it is now. Watch an NFL game. It is very obvious that the NFL is not in place to give us football games played by the best football players on the planet. The NFL is put in place so that they can have TV contracts, they can sell the sponsorship to Bud Light, Bud Light gives them a gazillion friggin' dollars, and they give that to the billionaire owners who own these teams. That's it. The NFL, be clear about this. The NFL is not the product. You are the product. Your eyeballs are the product. The NFL does not sell football to us. The NFL sells advertising in football to advertisers, providing our eyeballs as the product that they deliver to those advertisers. College football is on the way. And it's not even that it's going to have a huge impact on TV. It will get worse. Trust me, just like the NFL right now structures their games to fit on TV. This is why they're never going to change, even though everybody wants the overtime rules to change because nobody likes them the way they are. They're not going to. Why not? Because if you change it and we end up in a spot where you have an LSU-Texas A&M or a Georgia Tech 6-7-8 overtime game that goes another hour and a half past the game, what happens? The next game on TV is delayed, which means all the ads you sold to sell it, they can't be run, which means that money gets all screwed up. That's why they'll never change it. College football is going in that direction, and it's not going to change unless you take the eyeballs off of it. The fear I have isn't even that, because I'm used to it. I'm an NFL fan, have been since I was cheering. Never going to change. I'm used to it. My question is, when does it start impacting in-stadium experiences? Making it worse. Making it more, hey, we can't do the marching band halftime show because we've got to do this check presentation to our big sponsor that sponsors the whole stadium. You're not going to Memorial anymore. Now you're going to ExxonMobil Stadium in Clemson, South Carolina. When does that start to happen? The answer is inevitably it will, but is it soon or not? Because again, the people who signed the check to the Big Ten for $2 billion will want a seat at the table. And they will say, this is how we want your business to be run for our $2 billion to grow money for our investors to make off of you. And if the Big Ten takes that check for $2 billion, they will have to listen to that. And they will have to start, maybe not do everything they want, but start doing some stuff. And I promise you, those people don't give a damn about your enjoyment of college football. Watch it play out. All right, when we come back, Fight Club. We'll talk a little wrestling. Rob Young from Borderlands is here. We'll get his thoughts on a little WWE, a little AEW, a little NXT. Then we will end the show talking a little playoff baseball with the wild card round underway. All that coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into the Fight Club, where we haven't seen a Walmart fight that we didn't like. As long as we weren't involved in it, and then if we won, then we're good with it. Lots of things to get to, but we're gonna make it quick. The first thing I want to talk about is Dom Mysterio defeating Rusev. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the week, but Big E, remember him, had some comments, and what Big E said was that Dom Mysterio should now only be the guy who can do the Eddie Guerrero lying, cheating, stealing stuff with the belts and all that kind of thing. You agree with that? Because I do.
I do. I would say, first off, I don't know who anybody else that I even think I would be like, no, it's pretty cool that you're doing that. Like, there are some who have made it clear that, like, Eddie Guerrero was a hero of theirs growing up. Zelina Vega, I don't care if she hits a shimmy coming off a frog splash or whatever, but, like, to do the whole Guerrero gimmick, especially considering, in fairness, he is Eddie Guerrero's son. It makes sense.
He would have been if he hadn't lost that match. If Eddie hadn't lost the match to that bum ass Rey Mysterio Jr. What do you think about that, Rob Young? You think Dom Mysterio should be the only one to do that stuff?
Dude, I think he should. And you know, when you look at him, it you can make the argument he might be Eddie Guerrero's son.
It's the same hair, same
mustache. Yeah, like, what is going on here?
It is kind of, man. Yeah.
He's doing a love letter to his uncle.
Rob, you don't have the same mustache because it's not long enough.
Maybe
you
gotta
go. You got to go Fu Manchu.
Maybe I let it grow out a little bit and I do Dirty Dom for Halloween.
Hey, why not?
I mean, it might be the case.
That would be a really good Halloween costume.
You already know what I'm going as for Halloween, which we're not talking about. So, I mean, you should probably counter
it
with something.
Not talking about yet.
Okay. All right. The next thing I want to get to, can Jey Uso be the next tribal chief as a babyface? Because they are setting him up with the way the storylines are going. Roman Reigns returned Monday night, shook his hand. A lot of things looking like, you know, they set up from the beginning. Paul Heyman had said that you know, Jey Uso would be the next tribal chief? Can you do that as a babyface?
Here's the problem I have. I mean, theoretically, yeah, with the right writing, the right storylines, and the right performances, you can do anything in wrestling. That's why wrestling is great. The problem I have is when Jay is a mid-card guy, and I would even say, to some degree, a transitional champion, like, he wins the belt good. He's won over the crowd. That's all great. But at the same time, he's not a guy I think carries it long-term. That role, if you want the bloodline, or whatever you're going to call it next, to be what it was when Roman was in charge, you've got to have a guy that is not just a star, but a guy that can show up and put on tremendous matches. And as much as I love him as a dude who, the last time they were here, I was up yeeting all over the place as hard as anybody else was, when Jey Uso starts wrestling, it's just not great. It's not great.
He's not. I don't think he can put on the level of matches that Roman and some of those guys can. They're not bad, though. You know, they're not bad matches.
No, they're not bad. But they're just not good.
They're not those 4 or 5 star whatever kind of matches.
Yeah.
And I think you almost need that. I also think the best storylines are chasing, you know, the face chasing the heel, right? And if you're going to make them faces, then it feels second tier. They should be the top, and the guys are chasing them because they're cheating and doing the things they need to win.
I would agree.
All right, just a couple more things. All right, last night on AEW, Samoa Joe teamed up with Hangman Adam Page. Afterwards, Hangman Adam Page kind of like put Samoa Joe's belt, like threw it on the mat towards him. Samoa Joe felt disrespected. And so a fracas broke out between Hangman and Samoa Joe. Who you got?
Me, as a winner, because these are two of my favorite people in wrestling. I love Samoa Joe. I love the Millennial Cowboy. But I genuinely don't know the answer, because the reality is you can get a great story with either one of these guys going over. And then, as Rob pointed out, after that, then you have another whole other story about him having to go down, chase. It could be Adam Page bringing back the depressed, but I'm trying to be the best I can be Millennial Cowboy. I could have Samoa Joe flip over and go back to being the devastating muscle bomb monster that he used to be. I don't know the answer. I just know we win with this being a feud.
I'll tell you what. My feeling is I always thought Samoa Joe never got the push in WWE he should have got.
Concurred.
And anybody that saw him in ROH or TNA or any of that stuff knows he is a top-flight talent.
One of the best on the mic in the game, too.
And part of me would love him to have a run as world champion as a heel, because he can be that devastating power monster that walks away from the moonsault and makes you land on your face and all the fun stuff that he does. And I think that I think it's a perfect foil with Cowboy, because while he's smaller, he's tough as nails. He's had all these horrible matches with Swerve Strickland and everything else where he's bled all over the place, so they can really do some hardcore matches. I think it's literally a perfect mixture. It's peanut butter and chocolate.
Also, the walk out of the way is the greatest move in wrestling history.
It is the best
greatest move in wrestling history.
And I agree with you. I think the thing that's gotten in the way of Samoa Joe has been injuries. He just seems to get injured a lot when he's getting a push. Hopefully it doesn't happen here. Two more things. First of all, and this is going to play into what Rob's been talking about the entire show, rumored ticket prices for John Cena's final match have been revealed. And fifth row, row E, ramp side, WWE, $6,500 for ticket.
Holy cow.
Listen, right. You know the ticket prices are going to be elevated. Elevated because it's John Cena's final match. This is the walk. Assuming he doesn't.
That was the cheap ones.
Yeah.
I got more.
Ticketmaster.
Oh, you got better
is that
than that?
Ticketmaster or resale?
Wait, hang. Keep going. Yeah, let's hear the rest of these.
We got a little more. Second row, ramp side, $9,500 per ticket. And that's not, we got two more. TV side, ringside package, row one, $11,500. And finally, standard seats, you know, up in the wherever, those are $250 to $3,000.
So, you know, it's obviously going to be.
This is belief that this will be his last match. You don't charge this much unless you believe people think this is it, he's done. By the way, I think this is it, he's done.
No, I do too. And again, like unlike some of the other guys that they have their farewell matches, but then they have nothing else to do. Like John Cena is a Hollywood star now. Like he's got roles for probably as long as he wants, even if it's just DC playing Peacemaker. Here's the issue that I have. And I have loved WWE pretty much my entire life. We do, when they come around here, we promote them. I hope that continues forever. That makes sense to some degree because it is Cena, and this is probably a Mount Rushmore guy walking away, and he is a guy that walks away.
I think so.
But I also have to tag that with SmackDown's here in a couple of weeks, handful of weeks from now. To sit in the rafters at the Well, you're looking at $100 to get in the door per ticket. When you had the guy from CEO or from TKO, pardon me, 3 weeks ago say, we do not care about family experience. We do not care. We just want to make the money. Like he said it. That's the thing that you don't say the quiet part out loud. Like we know you want to spend as much. And how many times have I said, if there are butts in seats, they don't care whose butts are in seats. They care that butts are in seats. If you guys are going to sell out the Bonsecours Wellness Arena, I can't say anything about it. I know that I've been here 5.5 years. I have been at every WWE and AEW show that has come through here. And this is the first one that I'm going to miss because I cannot drop a Benji to sit in the rafters when $100 5.5 years ago when I moved here put me on the floor.
They've gotten really pricey, and it's a weird trade-off when all the PLEs are free.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when it was $27 on Peacock and you got everything, and now not only that, now not only are tickets to get in the building $100, but Lonzo and I counted it up a couple of weeks ago when this dropped. Like, we can play the game of what streaming company is carrying this weekend's event. And I never get it right, right? I got to pay 7 different streaming services to be able to watch everything if I want to watch NXT, Raw, SmackDown, every PLE, Saudi Arabia, whatever. When the dude came out and said, we don't care if you enjoy it. We just want to make as much money as we can. Like, set it. And then you're going to show up to a place I used to pay $40 to sit midway up on the bottom bowl, and now I got to pay upwards of, after fees and everything, $100 to sit in the rafters, which to me, not enjoyable to a little wrestling show. It's just not.
Well, how do you guys feel? And I know this is a change you may not want to do, but how do you guys feel about WrestleMania being in
despise it.
Saudi Arabia?
Despise it with every fiber of my being.
AEW has an opportunity to create that WrestleMania experience where all the indie people show up and run shows all week, run a big show.
Run your own show.
I'm pretty sure, and I can't remember, what's the name of the big independent company? There's a big independent in Africa.
GCW?
Yeah, I don't know if it's GCW.
Oh, GCW is what?
They're huge. Yeah. They run all, that's during WrestleMania week. They're the ones of those, that do all the crazy stuff.
Yeah, one of those places have already said that they're going to be, I think, somewhere and do a show, the biggest show they can do. This is what they'll have to do because those shows usually went on that entire weekend while WWE was going on, and they would make a lot of money, so they are still going to do that. I want to end on a positive note, though, and I want to go to Florida, we're not going to Jacksonville, though, so we're
good there.
Butthole
of America.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to Wilton Manors, Florida, outside of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
There's a man named Austin Sarasani, 31. He was arrested because he made the mistake of breaking into the wrong home. And the home that he broke into, an alleged Florida home intruder got a mean dose of karma after he was met with the occupant's mixed martial arts fighter son-in-law. So he got the mess beat out of him from an MMA guy by the name of Rojas. Rojas told local CBS affiliate CBS 12 that he has trained in MMA and has been participating in the sport for 3 years. I don't feel pain. Nothing. Rojas.
Oh, so he's a psychopath.
Told the outlet.
Great place to break into.
I'm prepared. This was not my first time. Rojas said he didn't have a weapon and just used his hands to defend himself against the alleged intruder. There are mugshots and he did what he needed to do to this guy. So my question is, who would whoop that booty more, an MMA guy, a boxer, or a pro wrestler?
You're not going to like the correct answer. It depends on how you mean it.
Oh, I know where you're going to go. So someone breaks into someone's house, and there's a pro there, either, like in this case, an MMA guy, or it's a pro wrestler, or it's a boxer.
The boxer. Is the boxer.
I knew that's where you
would
land.
No. It depends. Now, in fairness, I would say it depends. It depends on how aggressive the MMA guy is going to be. If he's the type of psychopath that's going to be like, you're not leaving here until I break every bone in your body, then the MMA guy, obviously. But if you're talking about, I just want to defend myself and get this guy out of my house, a pro boxer will drop any average dude in one shot. It is ball game, good night, sleep tight. In a shot, if a pro boxer is lined up against a dude.
Even if they're like a featherweight and this guy breaking in is like 275 pounds.
Doesn't matter. If you know how to throw a form punch, put it on the button against the guy who does not know how to defend or take it, it is an immediate night-night from a pro boxer.
All right, Rob?
You know my answer. I'm going to go with the MMA guy because depending on what occurs, because what we don't know is what the guy breaking in skills are.
That is true.
That's fair.
And so given that, the mixed martial artist is going to have more tools in his toolbox to handle whatever situation occurs.
That is fair. That's a fair point. I would say that that is fair play.
And see, that's where I was going to go to because I was going to put another a kung fu expert or something, but the MMA guy knows all that stuff. Also can throw in dirty boxing and things like that. And so I would like to
amend your question and say, I'll put it this way.
You can't change my question.
I can, and I am going to right now. If the question is who's going to do more damage, it's absolutely the MMA guy. If the question is who's going to end that encounter faster, it's the boxer. That's going to be the way I put it. If it's end it, just over, it's done, it's the boxer. If it's who's going to make that guy regret it for the rest of his life because he's in cast on all four extremities and drinking through a wire mouthpiece, then it's the MMA.
All right, one last thing before we go to break. I know that Rob and I agree on this. Rob Brown and I agree on this. I don't know about Rob Young. I just want to say I believe in Joe Hendry. Rob Young, do you believe in Joe Hendry?
I absolutely believe in Joe Hendry.
There we go.
Who doesn't believe in Joe Hendry?
Oh, there's people out there.
Well, they're wrong and they have problems. Let's take a break. When we come back, Major League Baseball postseason underway. Wild Card Series, we will have three game threes today.
And there's something going on this weekend.
We're getting to that too. We got three game threes today. We don't have a game four because Rob Young's LA Dodgers are on to take on the Phillies in round two. And we do have something going on coming up very soon that Rob's here to talk about. All that more coming up in the final segment of the Rob Brown Show next here on the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it will be in about 14 minutes from now, but we got about 14 minutes left here on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great Alonzo, and you, and joining us now in studio, he is the owner of Borderlands Comics and Games. And if you are a nerd like the great one and I are, you need to go there because it's got anything and everything. The vintage games, the comic books, the statues and figurines. I'm a D&D dork. They got all the D&D stuff you can handle. You want some campaign stuff. You want the minis. You want the paint to be cooler than your friends. They got it all for you. What's up, fella? How you doing?
How's it going, man?
Good, brother. You're busy.
You know, got something going on this weekend.
Are you? You got anything? What we got going on?
Man, we got South Carolina Fall Edition coming up at
That's
the Greenville
right.
Convention Center.
That's right. Comic-Con, baby. Love a con. Talk about it real quick.
All right, so
give us the rundown.
We got it Sunday from 11 to 6 at the Greenville Convention Center. Tickets are $18. VIP is $40. Kids 12 and under are free. It's 11 to 6. We've got trick-or-treating. We've got free comics. We've got wrestlers, among other media guests. Rick Steiner and Devon Dudley, who's about to have his last match.
Is it too cliche to walk up and tell him get the table? I feel like it is, right? Like he'd be like, okay,
it is,
dork.
But I would, you know, who doesn't want to get put to a table by Devon?
All right, I don't. I actually do. But I want to watch Rob get thrown through a table. So
I want to be. I don't know if he'd do it. Like we tried to get Gunther to chop me. Well, Lonzo tried to get Gunther to chop me.
Yeah,
when
but there's a legality to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's like, no, because you'll die. And he's probably right.
He's probably right.
His handler said no. Legal. Yeah. Legal. Yeah.
Like the player was like, you want me to chop you? I'll chop you.
Yeah. I wonder if, do you guys carry the insurance for Devon Dunn to put me through a table, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how much damage he does.
Fair enough. Fair enough. SC Comic-Con coming up this weekend, Greenville Convention Center. I have gone to, just almost every con, and we called it Comic-Con Junior there for a while, but like I don't like to call it that anymore because it's friggin' huge.
Yeah, it's over 50,000 square feet for the small show.
Yeah.
The small show is 50,000 square feet.
Yeah, it's insane. So
everybody's supported it so much.
If you're a dork, a nerd, a geek, and by the way, I love the fact that those are no longer pejorative words. Those are compliments now.
I think they are.
I know they are. Dorks run the world, and even the non-dorks will admit dorks run the world now. Make sure you check it out. Tell people where they can come find out information, get their tickets, et cetera, et cetera.
Super easy, guys. Check out SC Comic-Con on Facebook or Instagram. Go to sccomiccon.com. You can buy tickets there. You can also buy tickets at your local Ingles and at Borderlands Comics and Games. If you go by Borderlands and buy them right now, you can actually get your wristband. So when the show opens, you can just walk straight on in. If you bought tickets online, we are running a will call, so you can even come pick them up.
One thing you missed, and I want to make sure I point this out because there are people out there who have never got to experience this. The 501st is going to be there.
Oh, thank you, buddy. The 501st will be there. We're also going to have some Star Wars cars. There's a lot going on.
By the way, 501st, Stormtroopers, you got Mandalorians. It's so cool to see someone up close and be able to take pictures with those guys, which they're more than happy to do, and a group of them. I mean, if you want to get a picture taken with a Mandalorian and a stormtrooper? I mean, why wouldn't you want to do
that? In screen-accurate costumes, right? So they have to be screen-accurate for them to do it.
They make their own stuff.
My favorite thing was 2 or 3 years ago, there was an Ewok there holding a sign that said the Death Star was an inside job. I've never laughed harder in my life. In my life. It was fantastic. SC Comic-Con coming up this weekend. Make sure you grab your tickets. If that is your thing, this is your thing. Make sure you check it out. All right, now, Rob Young, let's talk a little baseball. I said going into
he called
these,
you Rob Lowe. I don't know, if you caught that.
He's also
a Dodgers fan.
Because I was watching the Dodgers-Reds game last night, which I'll get to in a minute. This doesn't ordinarily bother me because, yes, if I'm a league, I want to show that famous people, rich people, they want to come to my games. They like football, too. Last night, Rob Young, even for somebody, I don't hate the Dodgers. Like, I get it. They're playing by the way. I got no issue with the Dodgers like a lot of people do. Good Lord, it's like every third pitch, they're like, and here's another celebrity, and here's another, like it was everybody, and I get it, they're in LA, it makes sense, but like, God, it was a lot.
It's a lot. I'll agree. But you're in LA. It's like they almost can't take a picture of the front row of the stands behind home plate.
Without having one.
They're kind of stuck.
All right, let's talk about your baseball team. I said going into this baseball postseason that I am taking the Seattle Mariners out of the American League. I am all bought in. Starting pitching rotation is as good as anybody has. It's an underappreciated bullpen, but most importantly, Cal Raleigh is a dog, and the Mariners finally, after years of asking, at the trade deadline, went and got a couple of guys to protect him in that lineup. They had Naylor, they had Suarez. You cannot just issue a Cal Raleigh a free pass. You have to pitch to him, and if you pitch to him, there's a good chance one's going out of the pack. I like that Mariners team. I think they're complete. The Guardians scare me because they were a very hot team coming in, but that loss to the Tigers in Game 1, I'm like, okay, they've cooled off
a bit. Hard to beat Skubal.
Hard to beat Tarik Skubal. Guardians get it back last night. We'll see if they win game two. Except for the Guardians did beat Skubal the last two times that they faced them in the regular season. But I just like the Mariners. And assuming that the Mariners don't get rusty in a six-day layoff waiting for the divisional round, I think they're a more complete team than anybody. And I clue the Yankees in that. Over on the NL side, I said I got the team that I like. And then I've got another team with a caveat attached. I like the Brewers. I like the Brewers lineup, 1 through 9. There's not a weak spot on it. They're not a big power team, but they'll put the ball in play just about everybody.
And they play baseball.
Number two, their starting pitching is good. Their bullpens is probably the best in baseball. You put all that together because pitching wins in the playoffs, but you got to be able to score runs. They're great. I added the caveat, though. I said unless the Dodgers turn into the Dodgers we all thought they were going to be preseason, that the win total was at like 107.5, the highest I've ever seen. If those Dodgers show up, it's the Dodgers World Series. Forget the NL. Forget whatever. It's theirs. I said by the end of game two, we will know if they are. By game two of the opening series, we will know if they're there. Because if they come out ticked off that they're in the wild card round and that Philly took the 2 seed and they're mashing the baseball, everybody's in trouble. Well, Blake Snell was excellent. Yamamoto was excellent last night. And everybody's hitting the baseball. You had 13 hits and 5 home runs in game number one. You had 16 hits in the game last night. I think the NL's in trouble. That's all there is to it.
I think the team took a complete flip. So through the regular season, half their starting rotation was on the injured list.
Yep.
And but they kind of beat up their bullpen pretty bad, and it started showing. And then all those guys came back healthy at the same time. When you have to take Kershaw, who won 10 games in half a season and was pitching like a left-handed Greg Maddux, like it was crazy how well he was pitching, he's going to come out of the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's insane. Emmett Sheehan, who did not pitch good last night, but we know he was incredible during the regular season, and he only had one or two bad things. He both was a innings eater after Ohtani. He started games. He pitched in relief. That guy did well. He didn't have a good game. But their bullpen's looking good. When you've got Roki able to come out and throw a 100-mile-an-hour sinker, and this kid looked great, and for one or two innings, he could be a monster. It could be an interesting thing where you've almost got starters in relief as these series stretch out. And then if they're hitting, you know, Mookie now looks like Mookie. Muncy's back. You've got Kike, who can hit a .180 in the regular season and then turn around and hit .600 in the playoffs. It's going to be an interesting time.
I have made the point. There was a point in the regular season that the Dodgers' injured pitching list was a better rotation than about half Major League Baseball had, like, as their starting rotation. Unbelievable.
They were like seven starters deep or something.
And like good ones, too. Like
everybody was great.
Threat all-star players.
Yeah.
You got them all back. Like you mentioned, you've probably got two guys in your bullpen, maybe three, that are probably the ace on about 17 other Major League Baseball teams if they were to move over. But that's not, and that is the scary part, because again, pitching wins in the playoffs. That's not even the scary part. The scary part is that this team is now hitting the baseball the way that offensive lineup should. There is not a safe space from Shohei. Shohei Ohtani's batting leadoff now. Like, that's that guy, a man with 50 dingers this year, is your leadoff guy.
I still disagree with that, by the way. He should be hitting three.
I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, I got like three or four other guys I can roll in there. Leave Freddie exactly where he is. Mookie's kind of your traveling guy. I think if you find that there is a soft spot in the lineup where you got two or three guys going, you can just slide Mookie in the middle of that and kind of break that up.
Mookie can hit anywhere.
This team offensively is dangerous. Now, I've said before, like, you look at a lot of teams in years gone by that have come into the postseason and saying, we are the best hitting team, the best scoring team in baseball. Philadelphia has done it a number of times. Like, we're just mashers. We're going to score 100 runs. They don't win the World Series. I even go back to, and the example I have and will lean on again here, is the 2021 Atlanta Braves, which number one offense in baseball, and it wasn't close, most efficient, best batting average, best EP. They had everything, but they didn't win that World Series because of the bats. They won that World Series because their pitching was freaking lights out.
Pitching Tyler, got hot.
It got perfectly hot. That was all, to some degree, almost an accident, because that pitching staff should not have been as good as it performed in the postseason. The problem everybody else has now is the Dodgers hit as well as the Phillies have the last couple of years, but the Dodgers have the pitching staff to be better, more better of a pitching team than anybody else who's played in the World Series in the last few years.
Yeah, and the Phillies have, was it Zach Wheeler that had the, good guy and a great pitcher. I hate that happened to him. So that's going to be an issue for them.
Yep. Aaron Nola, who was their number two coming into the year, is a fat question mark right now, because he stank the second half of the season. Had a great outing his last time out, but that was one out of like the last 12.
You don't know what you're going to get.
You got no idea. Walker Buehler, like, there's plenty of questions.
And they're going to make him throw pitches.
And that's the other part, is the thing that I appreciate the most about the Dodgers, and you and I were having this conversation before we went on the air. The thing I genuinely appreciate about the Dodgers is not the power, and it's not guys like Mookie who can hit the ball wherever the ball needs to be hit. It's that 10, 11, 12 pitch at-bats are somewhat common for this team. Like, you will see pitchers, Hunter Green, who I love for the Reds, love Hunter Green for the Reds, like my favorite pitcher to watch play baseball. I looked up the box score after game one, because I think he went like 4.2. And I'm like, that's odd, because he's a 5-6 inning guy.
Right.
He was at 4.2 at like 91 pitches. Like, if you can get a guy to 90 pitches in the fourth inning and get to that pen earlier, unless you're playing Milwaukee, with that lineup, yeah, that's a World Series team.
Well, and I think just last night you saw Mookie, we were talking about it. He just kept spitting on pitches. He kept fouling them off. Ohtani did it too. When you can do that and force a really good pitcher to come into the zone, you can throw 100.
Yeah.
They're going to hit it if they know what's coming.
Yeah. There was a point last night that, and I don't remember who was at the plate, but the play-by-play guy called it. And it was 3-1, and he throws it, and it's like off. It's clearly in the zone. It's not off. It's not dead center. It's a little bit to the outside. And he goes, that's actually a good take. And I'm like, that's got mustard on it. Like, why is that a good take? And he goes, because you know what's next. You got runners on second and third. The next pitch is a strike, and it is grooved, and you know he's coming with heat. So now you know, even though you got to figure it out in the zone, you know it's coming 100, and you know it's coming over the plate. Like, you now have the ability to sit on the pitch. The last one could be anything. Could throw you a change at 89, could throw you the heat at 98, could throw you something that breaks into out, whatever. This pitch has got to be heat because that's his pitch, and it's got to be a strike. And it ended up being like a line out to right that scored one. But that's kind of the spot is work the count into the batter's favor, create a world where the pitcher's got to throw his number one pitch at you so you know what's coming and you know it's got to be over the plate, and then send one into orbit, Shohei.
Oh, the one he hit that went in that first game, like it almost went second deck. It went about as deep as you can go in Dodger Stadium. And Shohei is some kind of mutant. You know, we always talk about, wouldn't it be great to see Ty Cobb or Babe Ruth or, you know, any of these great players. And I think we are seeing that. I think the closest thing we would have had is Bonds. But, you know, somebody had a line. It's never been said that on the same night this guy hit his 50th home run and threw five no-hit innings.
Yeah.
That's the stuff you do on your Sega Genesis or something, right? When you're playing video games as a kid.
I have not subscribed to the theory that we'll never see it again because baseball is a global sport. We're putting more into it than we've ever seen before. Everybody wants to play. We're now propping up leagues internationally that are quality leagues. I'm not saying we'll never get it there again because there's a lot of people on earth getting into baseball. I am saying we've never seen it before. If we do see it again, it'll be special. Here's the hot take, Rob Young, and then we got to run to the end of the show. I have said it, and I'll stick on it again. I think you are watching the greatest baseball player in the history of professional baseball playing Shohei Ohtani because he can do everything Babe did from the dish, but he can also do everything that Koufax did from the bump. And he can be a Cy Young winner, and he can be your home run king any given year, probably both at the same time.
I think Ruth could have did it, but he never had the chance, right? We know he had the scoreless inning streak in the World Series, and it had to get broken by Mariano Rivera. But I think you're right.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever done what he's done.
Brother, appreciate you coming by, man. Good to see you.
Man, I appreciate you guys. Hope everybody heads out to SC Comic-Con on Sunday, and I hope to see you there.
Get your tickets right now, SC Comic-Con. If you're a dork, nerd, geek like us, it's the absolute best. Make sure you check it out. Thanks for being here. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you didn't, you've got bad taste in radio. Come back tomorrow. We'll try again, and we might even try harder because tomorrow is the Friday football fiesta. We'll give you all our predictions, prognostications, and projections for the weekend. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. That's also Rob. Glad to have you guys. See you back here tomorrow on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Later!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.